Welcome! You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
On the line, I have Bruce Gagnon. He coordinates a global network against weapons and nuclear power in space. Bruce is a longtime union organizer and lifelong peace advocate, and he writes for a blog called Organizing Notes. Hey, Bruce, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be with you.
Now, we just went through a U.S. election cycle. The Democrats were soundly defeated. They lost every swing state. They're leaving office in January, yet they feel they have a mandate to escalate the war in Russia by providing long-range missile systems to Ukraine that have struck deep inside Ukrainian territory. What on earth is happening, and do they want Trump to inherit World War III?
I get the impression that's what they're doing. They're trying to lock Trump in to make him have to continue the war because they're hoping that Russia will, you know, respond in a major way. I think Putin's way too smart to fall for the bait. But anyway, that's what they're hoping for. And they are doing their best to get the European countries to kick in more money. And the proposals that are coming out of Trump's new cabinet, so to speak, are not looking too good to me. They're basically saying, let's create a South Korea demilitarized zone, South Korea, North Korea demilitarized zone, right along the line of fighting, and put 100,000 NATO troops into Ukraine as quote unquote peacekeepers. Well, that's ridiculous. And then they're going to want to bring in German corporations and other corporations to build weapons for Ukraine, and possibly even go ahead and put them into NATO. So any response by Russia would then kick in the Rule 5 NATO treaty provision that says NATO would have to automatically respond to Russian attacks. So I don't think Russia's going to go for this plan. So I do think that no matter who's in office, these wars are going to keep going one way or the other. We're seeing the same thing in the Middle East, and now the moves to move NATO actually into the Asia Pacific to encircle China. So the U.S. knows it's a collapsing empire. Its sidekick, the United Kingdom, they're both very desperate, and they're likely to do anything.
You know, Bruce, it's so irresponsible and for a lame duck president to escalate conflict like this. Last week, just over a week ago, actually, I was driving around in central Burnaby, very urban area, when I got an emergency alert on my cell phone. I didn't really realize what it was, but later that day, I discovered everyone in Canada, the US, and Europe received the same text emergency. And it's because Russia, for the first time since the Cold War, has launched an ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile, into another country for the first time. I mean, it wasn't armed with a nuclear warhead, but it could have been, at Mach 10. And what the hell good is a text message? What would we be able to do if this were real? Can you talk about the real threat and the false sense of security that we're sitting on here?
Well, you know, we are on the cusp of a nuclear war. I think we're already in World War III. There's no doubt about it. What I just previously said about these three war fronts between this proxy war, and even Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of England, in the last two or three days in an interview, he had publicly acknowledged that this is a proxy war. He used the word, this is a proxy war, we're using Ukraine as a proxy against Russia. So between that war and what's happening throughout the Middle East, and now the effort to go after China, it is a World War III is underway right now. And it doesn't take much to ignite that fuse and to take us into nuclear war. So while you're driving down the road and you get that flash, on your cell phone that nuclear war has started. Yeah, what do you do? Crawl under your car? Lay in the back seat? I mean, forget about it. You're dead. And if you happen to survive for a day or two or three, you're going to wish you were dead. Let's put it that way, because between the radiation and the dark clouds of the burning of the cities all over the world, shutting out the sunlight, we move into the deep freeze, and nothing will grow. There's no food to eat. We're really screwed at that point. So it's really incumbent on all of us. I'm working harder than I've worked in years right now on all of these different issues. I'm on the street 3 days a week at least. We were just having a protest today at midday at Bath Ironworks here in Maine, where they build the Navy destroyers that are operating in all three of these particular places that we're talking about right now. They're surrounding China. They're in the Black Sea, the Baltic Sea, the Barents Sea, encircling Russia. And they're also in the Red Sea right now, shelling Yemen constantly, who's been trying to aid the Palestinian people in the war that Israel has laid on them. You know, I'm trying to do everything I can to just be visible and connect the dots with my signs and blogging about it and doing lots of other things. And but we need more people. You know, there's a real scarcity right now. I just had lunch with a person who is on the board of a Unitarian church here in Maine, and she asked her church to just have a program about Gaza, and they wouldn't even do it. So, I mean, this is where we are right now. People, for whatever reason, are too frightened, too worried, too concerned about what, you know, their neighbors are going to think of them or whatever. But we've got to get over this. Otherwise, we're all goners.
For sure. And I just want to say that I don't represent any political party. I've been disgusted with both most of my life, and including north of the border. But I'm not praising Trump at all. I just want to make that clear. Like, he's just appointed Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. I guess we're going to see some more nonsense in places like Venezuela, Cuba, in Latin America, as Marco is such a hawk. I don't know if you can recall the last Trump presidency, they decided to play politics in Venezuela, and they handpicked a new president that wasn't elected and caused almost a coup situation right in Venezuela. They pushed very hard for that. So do you see any breaks of light or potential good things about this new Trump picks that he's duped a lot of people to thinking he's their hero, but do you see any signs of hope coming from the Trump administration?
Well, one good thing, you mentioned Rubio. I want to say something about him. He's not going to be able to enter Russia. He's been banned for years from going into Russia. So here you have the Secretary of State cannot actually go into Russia and talk to the Russian government because of his really horrible right-wing politics. So there isn't much to hope for amongst any of the picks. You know, Tulsi Gabbard has over the years shown some sanity on some issues, but then I recently saw a video of her where she was just saying the most horrific things about the Palestinian people, and I was just dumbstruck how terrible it was. So I sort of have to cross her off my list of hopefuls. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's equally been terrible on the Palestinian issue, but he does appear to have some good things to do, you know, when it comes to medical issues and environmental issues. But outside of that, I really don't see much of anything. And we did a protest a couple of weeks ago in a rural town here in Maine, Farmington, Maine. And we move around every month. We have a statewide protest in a different place. Usually we try to go to places that don't have a lot of protests. And these three guys in camo, one of them, a big, huge guy, walked by and said, "You should have voted for Trump." And they saw us standing there holding signs. And when they came back, I said to them, you know, I didn't vote for Trump. And so we started talking, and we had a really good conversation. And in the end, I asked them this question: what are you going to do if Trump doesn't deliver on his stopping the wars message? And the guy said, without any hesitation, we're screwed. And so I think even people that supported Trump weren't necessarily enamored with him, but they just saw that they wanted to shake something up, and it was really, the for them, the only way to do that. And so this is where we are in America today. It's pretty sad.
We got to be aware of politicians. We're getting our opposition party in Canada, the Conservative Party, with this fake kind of working class populism by a bunch of elitists who they're so clearly not with the people, yet many people fall for that kind of false populism. Can we talk a little bit, Bruce, about public imagination? I mean, never before, I feel, in my opinion, have we had such a small group of out-of-touch people who don't have the interests of the Canadian people, of the American people at heart, and are willing just to take us down a dark path for their own interests. So what about public imagination? What can we do? What could be done with all this military waste, with all this money and death? If we could do away with that, what could we do, thinking about America, thinking about like a real vision? What could be done if we were to be able to roll back some of these wars?
Oh, you know, actually on my blog today, I put a 2019 video of a press conference that we held in the Portland, Maine Library, and it was about converting Bath Iron Works to building mass transit systems, commuter rail systems through the state, getting us out of our gas-guzzling cars, building offshore wind turbines, building tidal power systems, things like that. And the studies show that military spending is the worst way to create jobs, because military spending is capital-intensive, whereas every other kind of spending for any other need is labor-intensive. So you get more jobs per dollar, so to speak. And this is what I think is needed more than anything, because we're going to see an economic collapse all across the West. If we look closely to Germany right now, they're shutting down most of their manufacturing base, because when the Joe Biden had the Nord Stream pipeline blown up, that was going to deliver relatively cheap natural gas from Russia to Germany, that would be then distributed even beyond there throughout other parts of Europe. Suddenly Europe was having to buy LNG gas, frack gas, from the United States at 3 to 4 times the price as the gas they would have received from the Nord Stream pipeline. And so as a result of that, the German economy, the strongest economy in Europe, is now crashing. And so we're going to see that across the West now, because of this insanity that you just described, this constant war, this constant military spending at the exclusion of virtually everything else, and we're going to be in trouble. And so there is a time, now more than ever, where a real vision is needed, and the vision is converting the military-industrial complex. Now, I know in Canada, Trudeau is pushing hard for major expansion of F-35 spending and lots of other war-fighting technologies as well, including space stuff too. And where's that money going to come from? Who's going to pay for that? What's going to be cut or neglected because they're going to increase the military budget in Canada over the years to come? And so this is the time to talk about converting this military-industrial complex and doing it with real, real strong determination, and going out and organizing people and teaching the public how military spending is a dead end. It's the worst way to create jobs. And I promise you, people are looking for answers. They're getting worried. They're getting scared. And if there's no intervening vision, positive vision for the future, then what are they left with? They're just going to fall for people like Trump, fall for candidates from the right wing that pretend to be populists. And you know, so now's our time to speak up. And that's why I just reposted this press conference on my blog, because it was really a beautiful event. It started out with the then chief of the Penobscot Nation here in Maine, the indigenous nation, and he made a brilliant opening talk, and then we had a series of other great speakers. So I'm reprising this on my blog because I want people to know that this is still there. This is still a need. This is still a vision that we've got to all articulate.
You know, Bruce, you said so many things here, and I want to just reiterate that I think people are scared. There's high inflation, high taxes, and they're just trying to get by, and they don't know what to do. But I think people deep down intuitively know, and they look around the deteriorating cities and homelessness, and in Canada we're getting taxed to death. And I don't mind paying taxes, but I do mind paying taxes when I see all these problems. Like, why am I paying all these taxes if you can't just fix up the basic things that need to be fixed? If you can go to the hospital and see a doctor on time, or have a family doctor, or in the United States, how many people don't have health care or have too expensive health care that they can't afford? So I think people intuitively know, even with different political backgrounds, like you talked about the folks with the cameo jackets, we're talking to them. I've knocked on doors for a lot of candidates, and I've ran into very conservative people who kind of intuitively know something's wrong. We don't agree on anything, but we can agree that the money can be better used and better utilized. So maybe touch base on how you overcome a conversation with someone, Bruce, that might have radically different political views. How do you find common ground?
I think, first of all, you have to start with respect. In this case, this man, when he approached me the second time, and I said to him, you know, I didn't vote for Trump, that kind of neutralized him right then and there, because he thought he had me pegged, you know, oh, I'm a liberal Democrat or something like that. But beyond that, I spoke to him like a friend. I spoke to him as another human being. And maybe it's because my father, my stepfather, I should say, who raised me since I was like 3 years old, he was from Maine. He was working class. His family came out of the paper mills. And so I'm really comfortable around working class people. And I don't judge them, because what I find is I have a lot in common with them when I really begin to talk to them. And so I think this person sensed that. I reached out and touched his arm, you know, in a friendly way, the way you would to a friend. And we just had a really good conversation. And from then on, he was respectful. And when we departed, he really gave me a kind of a thankful, encouraging word, you know. So I think it's all about respect, not being so damn arrogant that you're going to teach them something. You know, it's really about listening as much as it is talking. And letting people see that you respect them as a human being. You know, we're all being so divided in our countries now because the oligarchs, the ruling oligarchs, understand that the economies are going to collapse. They understand that we could have a major upheaval like during the Depression, when the Communist Party became so big in the United States, and Franklin Roosevelt was worried about them actually taking power. And that's he famously said, you know, I'm doing all these programs because I'm trying to save capitalism. So, you know, these people, these ruling oligarchs today, know that it could go that way. And that's why they're working so hard to pit us against each other. And we can't let them do that. And the only way we avoid that is coming across someone that you don't necessarily think you agree with, and finding some common ground and learning that we don't have to agree on everything, but that you can have respect for one another. And I think that's the bottom line.
And you know what, Bruce, you're absolutely right. And when I what I think about some tactics of calling the other people who voted the other way just morons or uneducated or Nazis, it's just ridiculous and insulting, to say the least. And when I go onto social media, I see this isn't the real world. These are people manipulating the algorithms, because a lot of these people aren't even real. Why am I seeing outrageous posts from people that I don't follow, that haven't been retweeted? I think these social media companies are benefiting from the conflict, but in real life, nobody benefits from this conflict. And I've never met the people who are on social media. I've never met a person like that in real life. I've never had the opportunity. I've never had the difficult situation that I have when I go online. So I think a lot of our conflict is maybe being curated for views, for clicks. So what are your thoughts about...
Yeah, well, you know, it's a really important point, and I can promise you, because I'm constantly doing research on space and technology issues, people send me lots and lots of things every day, and I've seen multiple pictures of U.S. military warehouses where they have rows and rows and rows and rows of people and military people in uniform sitting at computers. And I know for a fact that one of the jobs in some of these places is they're assigned newspapers and organizations in a particular region or particular state, and they've got the whole country and probably the whole world lined up, and their job is to do nothing but send phony, fake news, create arguments, trash people, all that kind of thing. And so I think some of it is, in fact, as you say, curated. I don't have any doubt.
For sure. During the last election cycle here in British Columbia, I was making a post, and within seconds, someone responded to my post in debunking it and being very vulgar. So I was curious. I clicked on the account, and then I clicked on their posts, and it looks like they're making about 60 posts a minute. And I'm like, oh, this is a farm of people that are just hired to attack and create conflict. Now, Bruce, I think I know how you're going to respond, but I want to hear you say it. Who benefits when we're all fighting and divided?
I just, our newspaper that we publish a couple times a year called Space Alert, it's at the print shop right now, and I have a section called The Funnies. I always need a little bit of a laugh to keep me somewhat sane, and so I always have four cartoons in the newspaper, and one of them this time has what I call Mr. Big, a fat guy in a suit with a top hat on and smoking a cigar. And he's looking at an aquarium, and inside the aquarium is a man wearing a MAGA hat and a woman with purple hair, and they're arguing and almost, you know, at fisticuffs with each other. And he's, you know, overseeing this operation with delight on his face. And so this is who benefits, what I call Mr. Big. These are the people, the oligarchs. I've learned to use that word now. And I think we have regional oligarchs that are, representing various cities like New York, Washington, Boston, Los Angeles, Chicago, Dallas, things like that. And they have competing interests, but in the end, they do agree on a couple things. Number one is we have to keep the American people divided. Number two, we have to stay at war so that we can steal resources from the global south, because this is how we're able to feed one another, meaning us oligarchs, how we all get our piece of the pie, you know, as the Americans. It's like in Syria. The U.S. has bases in Syria that are stealing Syrian oil, all right? And who benefits from that? It's the regional oligarchs, and they're bought off to control the American people in the various parts of the country. When the U.S. begins to lose that control of places like Syria, where they can steal their oil, and the oligarchs are not getting such a big piece of the pie anymore, that's when you're going to see them start to fight with each other, because they're going to want to be in control so they can make decisions about how the pie is shared. But as long as they're controlling much of the global south and extracting resources and labor cheaply, they're fairly content. And that's what we've got in America now, and I'm sure in Canada too.
Yeah, the dumbing down of social media in the population. Never have we had access to more information, but yet people are so confidently wrong. I was just listening to a Rogan podcast, and he has some tech billionaire on there ranting that the Consumer Protection Agency, who protects us from bank gouging, is a bad idea and we should be rid of it. And oh my God, there's so much stupidity. I remember a cartoon, Bruce, I seen during the Iraq War, and there was a guy holding up a sign that says, I have 710 reasons to attack Iraq. And then his buddy says, oh, you got the sign upside down. It says oil. Right. So it's funny how the U.S. cares That's about great. Democracy in so many places that have valuable resources, like Venezuela.
Yeah, right.
Like, Iraq. So thank you for all the work you're doing. And I know you're tirelessly for decades now trying to make the world a little better than we found it. So how can people have access to your writings and your research? Because I think it's very important. The first part of fixing a problem is to determine exactly what the problem is.
Well, they could come to my blog called Organizing Notes, N-O-T-E-S. It's kind of like my daily, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm learning, and I share it with people. The address is space4peace.blogspot.com. space4peace.blogspot.com. And from there, you can really keep an eye on what I'm up to and what I'm thinking.
What do you say to someone who's listening to this and thinks kind of this is pie in the sky stuff and things are going to just unfold the way they are and they're feeling kind of hopeless?
Well, history only changes when people make a demand. Frederick Douglass said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. There would have been no end to chattel slavery in America had not there been a abolition movement. And at the time when it began, they could not see any light at the end of the tunnel. And that's the way history always changes, by very determined, stubborn people committed to doing their best, contributing in their lifetime. They might not see the end of the problem come true in their life, but they know that it must be done. It must be done to support the next seven generations, and that's the way I think too.
Thank you so much for thinking that way, Bruce, and inspiring others to do the same. And we'll talk to you soon, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Good luck to you.
Thank you for listening to Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an independently produced syndicated radio program made available for free to campus and community radios, and also to the world at latinwavesmedia.com. Please visit the website to hear previous shows, hear about upcoming events, and consider becoming a member for as little as $1 per month.